Are the Nahual and the Tonal within ourselves, you ask? You yourself would say that they are within ourselves. I myself would say that they are not, but neither of us would be right. The Tonal of your time calls for you to maintain that everything dealing with your feelings and thoughts takes place within yourself. The sorcerer's Tonal says the opposite. Everything is outside. Who's right? No one. Inside, outside, doesn't really matter. To explain all this is not that simple. No matter how clever the checkpoints of the Tonal are, the fact of the matter is that the Nahual surfaces. Its coming to the surface is always inadvertent, though. The Tonal's great art is to suppress any manifestation of the Nahual in such a manner that even if its presence should be the most obvious thing in the world, it is unnoticeable. Let's say that the Tonal, since it is keenly aware of how taxing it is to speak of itself, has created the terms I, myself, and so forth as a balance, and thanks to them, it can talk with other Tonals, or with itself, about itself. Now, when I say that the Tonal forces us to do something, I don't mean that there is a third party there. Obviously, it forces itself to follow its own judgments. On certain occasions, however, or under certain specific circumstances, something in the Tonal itself becomes aware that there is more to us. It is like a voice that comes from the depths, the voice of the Nahual. You see, the totality of ourselves is a natural condition, which the Tonal cannot obliterate altogether. And there are moments, especially in the life of a warrior, when the totality becomes apparent. At those moments, one can surmise and assess what we really are. When we die with the totality of ourselves. A sorcerer asks the question, if we're going to die with the totality of ourselves, why not then live with that totality? A warrior treats his Tonal in a very special manner. Life can be merciless with you if you are careless with your Tonal. To see a man as a Tonal entails that one cease judging him in a mortal sense, or excusing him on the grounds that he is like a leaf at the mercy of the wind. In other words, it entails seeing a man without thinking that he is hopeless or helpless. You know exactly what I am talking about. One can assess people without condemning or forgiving them. Youth is in no way a barrier against the deterioration of the Tonal. You say you think there might be a great many reasons for one's condition. I find that there is only one, our Tonal. And it is not that our Tonal is weak because, for example, we drink. It is the other way around. One drinks because one's Tonal is weak. That weakness forces one to be what he is. This happens to all of us in one form or another. But aren't I also justifying our behavior by saying that it's our Tonal? No, I'm giving you an explanation that you have never encountered before. It is not a justification or a condemnation, though. Our Tonals are weak and timid. All of us are more or less in the same boat. There is no need to treat the body in an awful manner, but the fact is that all of us have learned to perfection how to make our Tonal weak. I have called that indulging. Only a warrior has a proper Tonal. The average man, at best, can have a right Tonal. The Nahual is not experience or intuition or consciousness. Those terms and everything else you may care to say are only items on the island of the Tonal. The Nahual, on the other hand, is only an effect. The Tonal begins at birth and ends at death, but the Nahual never ends. The Nahual has no limit. I have said that the Nahual is where power hovers. That is only a way of alluding to it by reasons of its effect. Perhaps the Nahual can be best understood in terms of power. One of the acts of a warrior is never to let anything affect him. Thus, a warrior may be seeing the devil himself, but he won't let anyone know that. The control of a warrior has to be impeccable. A proper Tonal is a Tonal that is just right, balanced and harmonious. There are, roughly speaking, two sides to every Tonal. One is the outer part, the fringe, the surface of the island. That's the part related to action and acting, the rugged side. The other part is the decision and judgment, the inner Tonal, softer, more delicate, and more complex. The proper Tonal is a Tonal where the two levels are in perfect harmony and balance. For a proper Tonal, everything on the island of the Tonal is a challenge. Another way of saying it is that for a warrior, everything in this world is a challenge. The greatest challenge of all, of course, is his bid for power. But power comes from the Nahual, and when a warrior finds himself at the edge of the day, it means that the hour of the Nahual is approaching, the warrior's hour of power. One bids for power, and that bidding is irreversible. I wouldn't say that at the time power comes that one is about to fulfill his destiny, because there is no destiny. The only thing that can be said then is that at that point one is about to fulfill his power. The best of us always comes out when we are against the wall, when we feel the sword dangling overhead. Personally, I wouldn't have it any other way. Men are very frail creatures who make themselves even more frail with their indulging. Seeing must be direct, for a warrior can't use his time to unravel what he himself is seeing. Seeing is seeing because it cuts through all that nonsense. In the beginning, seeing is confusing, and it's easy to get lost in it. As the warrior gets tighter, however, his seeing becomes what it should be, a direct knowing. A warrior asks a question, and through his seeing, he gets an answer. But the answer is simple. A rule of thumb for a warrior is that he makes his decisions so carefully that nothing that may happen as a result of them can surprise him, much less drain his power. To be a warrior means to be humble and alert. When you come to see me, you should come prepared to die. If you come here ready to die, there shouldn't be any pitfalls or any unwelcome surprises or any unnecessary acts. Everything should gently fall into place because you're expecting nothing. It's not that you have to live with all this. You are all this. A warrior doesn't ever leave the island of the Tonal. He uses it. This is your world. You can't renounce it. It is useless to get angry and feel disappointed with oneself. All that that proves is that one's Tonal is involved in an internal battle. A battle within one's Tonal is one of the most inane contests I can think of. The tight life of a warrior is designed to end that struggle. From the beginning, I have taught you to avoid wear and tear. The warrior's way is harmony. The harmony between actions and decisions at first, and then the harmony between Tonal and Nahual. It is the Tonal that has to relinquish control. The Tonal is made to give up unnecessary things like self-importance and indulging, which only plunge it into boredom. The whole trouble is that the Tonal clings to those things when it should be glad to rid itself of that crap. The task, then, is to convince the Tonal to become free and fluid. That's what a sorcerer needs before anything else, a strong, free Tonal. The stronger it gets, the less it clings to its doings, and the easier it is to shrink it. The Tonal shrinks at given times, especially when it is embarrassed. Once the Tonal has shrunk, the Nahual, if it is already in motion, no matter how small that motion is, will take over and achieve extraordinary deeds. The affairs of the Nahual can be witnessed only with the body, not the reason. We are fluid, luminous beings, made out of fibers. The agreement that we are solid objects is the Tonal's doing. When the Tonal shrinks, extraordinary things are possible, but they are only extraordinary for the Tonal. The Nahual, once it learns to surface, may cause great damage to the Tonal by coming out without any control. Your Tonal has to be convinced about all this with reasons, your Nahual with actions, until one props the other. As I've told you, the Tonal rules, and yet it is very vulnerable. The Nahual, on the other hand, never, or almost never, acts out, but when it does, it terrifies the Tonal. The Tonal must be protected at any cost. The crown has to be taken away from it, but it must remain as the protected overseer. Any threat to the Tonal always results in its death, and if the Tonal dies, so does the whole man. Because of its inherent weakness, the Tonal is easily destroyed, and thus one of the balancing acts of the warrior is to make the Nahual emerge in order to prop up the Tonal. I say it is an art, because sorcerers know that only by boosting the Tonal can the Nahual emerge. That boosting is called personal power. My advantage over you at this moment is that I know how to get to the Nahual, and you don't. But once I have gotten there, I have no more advantage and no more knowledge than you. In moments of great danger, fear, or stress, push your belly down by pressing the diaphragm down while taking 4 sharp gasps of air through the mouth, followed by 4 deep inhalations and exhalations through the nose. The gasps of air have to be felt as jolts in the middle part of the body. Keeping the hands tightly clasped, covering the navel, gives strength to the midsection and helps to control the gasps and the deep inhalations, which have to be held for a count of 8 as one presses the diaphragm down. The exhalations are done twice through the nose and twice through the mouth in a slow or accelerated fashion, depending on one's preference. The nahual is only for witnessing. When one is dealing with the nahual, one should never look into it directly. The only way to look at the nahual is as if it were a common affair. One must blink in order to break the fixation. Our eyes are the eyes of the tonal, or perhaps it would be more accurate to say that our eyes have been trained by the tonal, therefore the tonal claims them. One of the sources of an apprentice's bafflement and discomfort is that his tonal doesn't let go of his eyes. The day it does, his nahual will have won a great battle. Your obsession, or better yet, everyone's obsession, is to arrange the world according to tonal's rules. So every time we are confronted with the nahual, we go out of our way to make our eyes stiff and intransigent. I must appeal to that part of your tonal which understands this dilemma, and you must make an effort to free your eyes. The point is to convince the tonal that there are worlds that can pass in front of the same windows. Let your eyes be free. Let them be true windows. The eyes can be the windows to peer into boredom or to peek into that infinity. All you have to do is to set up your intent as a customs house. Whenever you are in the world of the tonal, you should be an impeccable tonal. No time for irrational crap. But whenever you are in the world of the nahual, you should also be impeccable. No time for rational crap. For a warrior, intent is the gate in between. It closes completely behind him when he goes either way. Another thing one should do when facing the nahual is to shift the line of the eyes from time to time in order to break the spell of the nahual. Changing the position of the eyes always eases the burden of the tonal. This shifting should be done only as a relief, though, not as another way of palisading yourself to safeguard the order of the tonal. If there are too many unnecessary items on your island, you won't be able to sustain the encounter with the nahual. No one is capable of surviving a deliberate encounter with the nahual without a long training. It takes years to prepare the tonal for such an encounter. Ordinarily, if an average man comes face to face with the nahual, the shock would be so great that he would die. The goal of the warrior's training, then, is not to teach him to hex or to charm, but to prepare his tonal not to crap out, a most difficult accomplishment. A warrior must be taught to be impeccable and thoroughly empty before he could even conceive witnessing the nahual. The island of the tonal has to be swept clean and maintained clean. That's the only alternative that a warrior has. A clean island offers no resistance. It is as if there were nothing there. Nothing that we may have gained in the course of our lives can reveal to us the designs of power. A warrior must struggle like a demon to shrink his tonal, and yet at the very moment the tonal shrinks, the warrior must reverse all that struggle to immediately halt that shrinking. After the tonal shrinks, the warrior is closing the gate from the other side. As long as his tonal is unchallenged and his eyes are tuned only for the tonal's world, the warrior is on the safe side of the fence. He is on familiar ground and knows all the rules. But when his tonal shrinks, he is on the windy side, and that opening must be shut tight immediately, or he would be swept away. As a rule, the tonal must defend itself at any cost every time it is threatened. So it is of no real consequence how the tonal reacts in order to accomplish its defense. The only important matter is that the tonal of a warrior must become acquainted with other alternatives. What a teacher aims for in this case is the total weight of those possibilities. It is the weight of those new possibilities which helps to shrink the tonal. By the same token, it is the same weight which helps stop the tonal from shrinking out of the picture. The nahual can perform extraordinary things that do not seem possible, things that are unthinkable for the tonal. But the extraordinary thing is that the performer has no way of knowing how those things happen. The secret of the sorcerer is that he knows how to get to the nawal, but once he gets there, your guess is as good as his as to what takes place. Let's say that the warrior learns to tune his will, to direct it to a pinpoint, to focus it wherever he wants. It is as if his will, which comes from the midsection of his body, is one single luminous fiber, a fiber that he can direct at any conceivable place. That fiber is the road to the nawal, or I could also say that the warrior sinks into the nawal through that single fiber. Once he has sunk, the expression of the nawal is a matter of his personal temperament. One of the aims of the warrior's training is to cut the bewilderment of the tonal until the warrior is so fluid that he can admit everything without admitting anything. The yell of a warrior is one of the most important issues of sorcery. You can focus on your yell, using it as a vehicle. A warrior follows the dictums of power. The only way to fend off the nawal is to remain unaltered. The nawal is only for witnessing, so we can talk about what we witness and about how we witness it. You want to take on the explanation of how it is all possible, though, and that is an abomination. You want to explain the nawal with the tonal. That is stupid. We make sense in talking only because we stay within certain boundaries, and those boundaries are not applicable to the nawal. To be a perfect tonal means to be aware of everything that takes place on the island of the tonal. It takes a gigantic struggle to clean the island of the tonal. We interpret any unknown expression of the nawal as something we know. The nawal might be interpreted as a breeze shaking the leaves, or even as some strange light, perhaps a lightning bug of unusual size. If a man who doesn't see is pressed, he would say that he thought he saw something, but could not remember what. This is only natural. The man would be talking sense. After all, his eyes would have judged nothing extraordinary. Being the eyes of the tonal, they have to be limited to the tonal's world, and in that world there is nothing staggeringly new, nothing which the eyes cannot apprehend and the tonal cannot explain. In order to be an average tonal, a man must have unity. His whole being must belong to the island of the tonal. Without that unity, the man would go berserk. A sorcerer, however, has to break that unity, but without endangering his being. A sorcerer's goal is to last. That is, he doesn't take unnecessary risks. Therefore, he spends years sweeping his island until a moment when he could, in a manner of speaking, sneak off it. The whispering of the nawal will come at times and then vanish. Don't be afraid of it, or of any unusual sensation that you may have from now on. But above all, don't indulge and become obsessed with those sensations. A warrior is, let's say, a prisoner of power, a prisoner who has one free choice, the choice to act either like an impeccable warrior or to act like an ass. In the final analysis, perhaps the warrior is not a prisoner, but a slave of power, because that choice is no longer a choice for him. He cannot act in any other way but impeccably. To act like an ass would drain him and cause his demise. An immortal being has all the time in the world for doubts and bewilderment and fears. A warrior, on the other hand, cannot cling to the meanings made under the tonal's order, because he knows for a fact that the totality of himself has but a little time on this earth. A warrior cannot be helpless or bewildered or frightened, not under any circumstances. For a warrior, there is time only for his impeccability. Everything else drains his power. Impeccability replenishes it. Impeccability is to do your best in whatever you're engaged in. The key to all these matters of impeccability is the sense of having or not having time. As a rule of thumb, when you feel and act like an immortal being that has all the time in the world, you are not impeccable. At those times you should turn, look around, and then you will realize that your feeling of having time is an idiocy. There are no survivors on this earth. Turn off your internal dialogue and let something in you flow out and expand. That something is your perception. But don't try to figure out what I mean. Just let the whispering of the nawal guide you. There's no future. The future is only a way of talking. For a sorcerer, there is only the here and now. Everything that I've done with you was done to accomplish one single task, the task of cleaning and reordering your island of the Tonal. I've told you countless times that a most drastic change is needed if you want to succeed in the path of knowledge. That change is not a change of mood or attitude or outlook. That change entails transformation of the island of the Tonal. Once that transformation has been accomplished, a teacher would usually say to his disciple that he has arrived at a final crossroad. To say such a thing is misleading, though. In my opinion, there is no final crossroad, no final step to anything. And since there is no final step to anything, there shouldn't be any secrecy about any part of our lot as luminous beings. Personal power decides who can or who cannot profit by a revelation. My experiences with my fellow men have proven to me that very, very few of them would be willing to listen. And of those few who listen, even fewer would be willing to act on what they have listened to. And of those who are willing to act, even fewer have enough personal power to profit by their acts. So the matter of secrecy about the sorcerer's explanation boils down to a routine. Perhaps a routine as empty as any other routine. At any rate, you now know about the Tonal and the Nahual, which are the core of the sorcerer's explanation. To know about them seems to be quite harmless. We are talking innocently about them as if they were just an ordinary topic of conversation. But before we venture beyond this point, a fair warning is required. A teacher is supposed to speak in earnest terms and warn his disciple that the harmlessness and placidity of this moment are a mirage, that there is a bottomless abyss in front of him, and that once the door opens, there is no way to close it again. The years of hard training are only a preparation for the warrior's devastating encounter with whatever lies out there beyond this point. What will happen in that encounter depends on whether or not you have enough personal power to focus your unwavering attention on the wings of your perception. So let's review what we've done. The first act of a teacher is to introduce the idea that the world we think we see is only a view, a description of the world. Accepting that seems to be one of the hardest things one can do. We are complacently caught in our particular view of the world, which compels us to feel and act as if we know everything about the world. A teacher, from the very first act he performs, aims at stopping that view. Sorcerers call it stopping the internal dialogue, and they are convinced that it is the single most important technique that an apprentice can learn. In order to stop the view of the world which one has held since the cradle, it is not enough to just wish or make a resolution. One needs a practical task. That practical task is called the right way of walking. It seems harmless and nonsensical. As everything else which has power in itself or by itself, the right way of walking does not attract attention. Walking in that specific manner saturates the Tonal. It floods it. You see, the attention of the Tonal has to be placed on its creations. In fact, it is that attention that creates the order of the world in the first place. So the Tonal must be attentive to the elements of its world in order to maintain it, and must, above all, uphold the view of the world as internal dialogue. The right way of walking is a subterfuge. The warrior, first by curling his fingers, draws attention to the arms, and then by looking fixedly without focusing his eyes at any point directly in front of him on the arc that starts at the tip of his feet and ends above the horizon, literally floods his Tonal with information. The Tonal, without its one-to-one relation with the elements of its description, is incapable of talking to itself, and thus one becomes silent. The position of the fingers does not matter at all. The only consideration is to draw attention to the arms by clasping the fingers in various unaccustomed ways. The important thing is the manner in which the eyes, by being kept unfocused, detect an enormous number of features of the world without being clear about them. The eyes in that state are capable of picking out details which are too fleeting for normal vision. Together with the right way of walking, a teacher must teach his apprentice another possibility, which is even more subtle, the possibility of acting without believing, without expecting rewards, acting just for the hell of it. I wouldn't be exaggerating if I told you that the success of a teacher's enterprise depends on how well and how harmoniously he guides his apprentice in this specific respect. Stopping the internal dialogue is, however, the key to the sorcerer's world. The rest of the activities are only props. All they do is accelerate the effect of stopping the internal dialogue. There are two major activities or techniques used to accelerate the stopping of the internal dialogue: erasing personal history and dreaming. The secret of all this is one's attention. All of this exists only because of our attention. This very rock where we're sitting is a rock because we have been forced to give our attention to it as a rock. Erasing personal history and dreaming should only be a help. What any apprentice needs to buffer him is temperance and strength. That's why a teacher introduces the warrior's way, or living like a warrior. This is the glue that joins together everything in the sorcerer's world. Bit by bit, a teacher must forge and develop it. Without the sturdiness and level-headedness of the warrior's way, there is no possibility of withstanding the path of knowledge. In order to help erase personal history, three other techniques are taught. They are losing self-importance, assuming responsibility, and using death as an advisor. Without the beneficial effect of those three techniques, erasing personal history would involve the apprentice in being shifty, evasive, and unnecessarily dubious about himself and his actions. By now, there is no way for you to recollect the immense effort that you needed to establish self-pity as a feature of your island. Self-pity bore witness to everything you did. It was just at your fingertips, ready to advise you. Death is considered by a warrior to be a more amenable advisor, which can also be brought to bear witness on everything one does, just like self-pity or wrath. Obviously, after an untold struggle, you have learned to feel sorry for yourself, but you can also learn in the same way to feel your impending end, and thus you can learn to have the idea of your death at your fingertips. As an advisor, self-pity is nothing in comparison to death. There is seemingly a contradiction in the idea of change. On the one hand, the sorcerer's world calls for a drastic transformation, and on the other, the sorcerer's explanation says that the island of the Tunal is complete and not a single element of it can be removed. Change, then, does not mean obliterating anything, but rather altering the use assigned to those elements. Take self-pity, for instance. There is no way to get rid of it for good. It has a definite place and character in your island, a definite facade which is recognizable. Thus, every time the occasion arises, self-pity becomes active. It has history. If you then change the facade of self-pity, you would have shifted its place of prominence. One changes the facade by altering the use of the elements of the island. Take self-pity again. It is useful to you because you either feel important and deserving of better conditions, better treatment, or because you are unwilling to assume responsibility for the acts that brought you to the state that elicited self-pity, or because you are incapable of bringing the idea of your impending death to witness your acts and advise you. Erasing personal history and its three companion techniques are the sorcerer's means for changing the facade of the elements of the island. For instance, by erasing your personal history, you deny use to self-pity. In order for self-pity to work, you have to feel important, irresponsible, and immortal. When those feelings are altered in some way, it is no longer possible for you to feel sorry for yourself. Your self-pity will still be a feature of your island. It will be there in the back in the same way that the idea of your impending death or your humbleness or your responsibility for your acts has been there without ever being used. Once all those techniques have been presented, the apprentice arrives at a crossroad. Depending on his sensibility, the apprentice does one of two things. He either takes the recommendations and suggestions made by his teacher at their face value, acting without expecting rewards, or he takes everything as a joke or an aberration. If you use those four techniques to clear and reorder your island of the Tonal, they lead you to the Nahual. Power provides according to your impeccability. If you seriously use those four techniques, you will store enough personal power. You will be impeccable, and power will open all the necessary avenues. That is the rule. We function at the center of reason exclusively, regardless of who we are or where we come from. Reason can naturally account in one way or another for everything that happens within its view of the world. Sorcerers have learned, after generations, to account in their views for everything that is accountable about them. I would say that sorcerers, by using their will, have succeeded in enlarging their views of the world. Some, though, are not men of knowledge. They never break the bounds of their enormous views and thus never arrive at the totality of themselves. Only if one pits two views against each other can one weasel between them and arrive at the real world. That is, one can arrive at the totality of oneself only when one fully understands that the world is merely a view, regardless of whether that view belongs to an ordinary man or to a sorcerer. What matters is not to learn a new description, but to arrive at the totality of oneself. One should get to the Nahual without maligning the Tonal, and above all, without injuring one's body. The Tonal doesn't know that decisions are in the realm of the Nahual. When we think we decide, all we're doing is acknowledging that something beyond our understanding has set up the frame of our so-called decision, and all we do is to acquiesce. In the life of a warrior, there is only one thing, one issue alone, which is really undecided: how far one can go on the path of knowledge and power. That is an issue which is open, and no one can predict its outcome. I once told you that the freedom a warrior has is either to act impeccably or to act like a nincompoop. Impeccability is indeed the only act which is free, and thus the true measure of a warrior's spirit. I've taught you the three techniques that help dreaming: disrupting the routines of life, the gate of power, and not doing. Disrupting routines, the gate of power, and not doing are avenues for learning new ways of perceiving the world, and they give a warrior an inkling of incredible possibilities of action. The knowledge of a separate and pragmatic world of dreaming is made possible through the use of those three techniques. Dreaming is a practical aid devised by sorcerers. They were not fools. They knew what they were doing and sought the usefulness of the Nahual by training their Tonal to let go for a moment, so to speak, and then grab again. This statement may not make sense to you, but that's what you're doing, training yourself to let go without losing your marbles. Dreaming, of course, is the crown of the sorcerer's efforts, the ultimate use of the Nahual. We're at the end of our review. All in all, then, you have been being led into the Nahual. But here we have a strange question. What is being led into the Nahual? Not reason. Reason is meaningless there. Reason craps out in an instant when it's out of its safe, narrow bounds. Your Tonal? No, the Tonal and the Nahual are the two inherent parts of ourselves. They cannot be led into each other. Your perception. We're coming now to the sorcerer's explanation. It won't explain anything, and yet sorcerers say that we are inside a bubble. It is a bubble into which we are placed at the moment of our birth. At first the bubble is open, but then it begins to close until it has sealed us in. That bubble is our perception. We live inside that bubble all of our lives, and what we witness on its round walls is our own reflection. If what we witness on the walls is our own reflection, then the thing that's being reflected must be the real thing. The thing reflected is our view of the world. That view is first a description, which is given to us from the moment of our birth until all our attention is caught by it, and the description becomes a view. The teacher's task is to rearrange the view, to prepare the luminous being for the time when the spirit opens the bubble. The bubble is opened in order to allow the luminous being a view of his totality. Naturally, this business of calling it a bubble is only a way of talking, but in this case, it is an accurate way. The delicate maneuver of leading a luminous being into the totality of himself requires that the teacher reorder the view of the world. I have called that view the island of the Tonal. I have said that everything that we are is on that island. The sorcerer's explanation says that the island of the Tonal is made by our perception, which has been trained to focus on certain elements. Each of these elements, and all of them together, form our view of the world. The job of a teacher, insofar as the apprentice's perception is concerned, consists of reordering all the elements of the island on one half of the bubble. By now you must have realized that cleaning and reordering the island of the Tonal means regrouping all its elements on the side of reason. My task has been to disarrange your ordinary view, not to destroy it, but to force it to rally on the side of reason. The art of a teacher is to force his disciple to group his view of the world on the right half of the bubble. That's the side of the Tonal. The teacher always addresses himself to that side. By presenting his apprentice with the warrior's way, he forces him into reasonableness and sobriety and strength of character and body. The other half of the bubble, the one that has been cleared, can then be claimed by something sorcerers call will. We can better explain this by saying that the task of the teacher is to wipe clean one half of the bubble and to reorder everything on the other half. The spirit then opens the bubble on the side which has been cleaned. Once the seal is broken, the warrior is never the same. He has then the command of his totality. Half of the bubble is the ultimate center of reason, the Tonal. The other half is the ultimate center of will, the Nahual. This is the order that should prevail. Any other arrangement is nonsensical and petty because it goes against our nature. It robs us of our magical heritage and reduces us to nothing. We have one single issue left. Sorcerers call it the secret of the luminous beings, and that is the fact that we are perceivers. We men and all other luminous beings on earth are perceivers. That is our bubble, the bubble of perception. Our mistake is to believe that the only perception worthy of acknowledgement is what goes through our reason. To be ready for the sorcerer's explanation is a very difficult accomplishment. It shouldn't be, but we insist on indulging in our lifelong view of the world. The mystery or the secret of the sorcerer's explanation is that it deals with unfolding the wings of perception. The nawo by itself is of no use. It has to be tempered by the tonal. The sorcerer's secret in using the nawo is in our perception. There's no way to get to the sorcerer's explanation unless one has willingly used the nawo, or rather, unless one has willingly used the tonal to make sense out of one's actions in the nawo. Another way of making all this clear is to say that the view of the tonal must prevail if one is going to use the nawal the way sorcerers do. Order in our perception is the exclusive realm of the tonal. Only there can our actions have a sequence. Only there are they like stairways where one can count the steps. There is nothing of that sort in the nawal. Therefore, the view of the tonal is a tool, and as such, it is not only the best tool, but the only one we've got. This is the sorcerer's explanation. The nawal is the unspeakable. All the possible feelings and beings and selves float in it like barges, peaceful, unaltered, forever. Then the glue of life binds some of them together. When the glue of life binds those feelings together, a being is created, a being that loses the sense of its true nature and becomes blinded by the glare and clamor of the area where beings hover, the tonal. The tonal is where all the unified organization exists. A being pops into the tonal once the force of life has bound all the needed feelings together. I said to you that the tonal begins at birth and ends at death. I said that because I know that as soon as the force of life leaves the body, all those single awarenesses disintegrate and go back again to where they came from, the nawal. What a warrior does in journeying into the unknown is very much like dying, except that his cluster of single feelings do not disintegrate but expand a bit without losing their togetherness. At death, however, they sink deeply and move independently, as if they had never been a unit. There is no way to refer to the unknown. One can only witness it. The sorcerer's explanation says that each of us has a center from which the nawal can be witnessed, the will. A warrior can venture into the nawal and let his cluster arrange and rearrange itself in any way possible. I have called that cluster the bubble of perception. I have also said that it is sealed, tight. Closed tightly, and that it never opens until the moment of our death. Yet it could be made to open. Sorcerers have obviously learned that secret, and although not all of them arrive at the totality of themselves, they know about the possibility of it. They know that the bubble opens only when one plunges into the nawal. The secret of the double is in the bubble of perception. The cluster of feelings can be made to assemble instantly anywhere. In other words, one can perceive the here and the there at once. You are a nameless cluster of feelings. There is another center of assemblage, the will, through which it is possible to judge or assess and use the extraordinary effects of the nawal. One can reflect the nawal through the will, although one can never explain it. The conviction that there is a real you is a result of the fact that you have rallied everything you've got around your reason. At this point, your reason admits that the nawal is the indescribable, not because the evidence has convinced it, but because it is safe to admit that. Your reason is on safe ground. All the elements of the tonal are on its side. To make reason feel safe is always the task of the teacher. The teacher tricks the apprentice's reason into believing that the tonal is accountable and predictable. I have labored to give you the impression that only the nawal is beyond the scope of explanation. The proof that the tricking was successful is that at this moment it seems to you that there is still a core that you can claim as your own, your reason. That's a mirage. Your precious reason is only a center of assemblage, a mirror that reflects something which is outside of it. The last piece of the sorcerer's explanation says that reason is merely reflecting an outside order, and that reason knows nothing about that order. It cannot explain it. In the same way, it cannot explain the nawal. Reason can only witness the effects of the tonal, but never, ever could it understand it or unravel it. The very fact that we are thinking and talking points out an order that we follow without ever knowing how we do that or what the order is. Sorcerers say that through the will they can witness the effects of the nawal. I can add now that through reason, no matter what we do with it or how we do it, We are merely witnessing the effects of the tonal. In both cases, there is no hope ever to understand or to explain what it is that we are witnessing. The wings of perception can take us to the most recondite confines of the Nahual, or to inconceivable worlds of the tonal. The tonal of every one of us is but a reflection of that indescribable unknown filled with order. The Nahual of every one of us is but a reflection of that indescribable void that contains everything. You have nothing except the force of your life that binds that cluster of feelings. Turn off your internal dialogue, gather the power needed to unfold the wings of your perception, and fly to that infinitude. You need nothing except impeccability. What really matters is being an impeccable warrior. Your only chance is your impeccability. You must wait without regrets. You must wait without expecting rewards. If you don't act impeccably, if you begin to fret and get impatient and desperate, you'll be cut down mercilessly by the sharp shooters from the unknown. If, on the other hand, your impeccability and personal power are such that you are capable of fulfilling your task, you will then achieve the promise of power. And what's that promise, you ask? It is a promise that power makes to men as luminous beings. Each warrior has a different fate, so there is no way of telling what that promise will be for you. You have learned that the backbone of a warrior is to be humble and efficient. You have learned to act without expecting anything in return. Now I tell you that in order to withstand what lies ahead of you beyond this day, you'll need your ultimate forbearance. A warrior must be always ready. The fate of all of us here has been to know that we are the prisoners of power. No one knows why us in particular, but what a great fortune. We are all alone. That's our condition. We are alone, but to die alone is not to die in loneliness. What a wonderful thing it is to be in this beautiful world, in this marvelous time. A warrior acknowledges his pain, but he doesn't indulge in it. Thus, the mood of a warrior who enters into the unknown is not one of sadness. On the contrary, he is joyful because he feels humbled by his great fortune, confident that his spirit is impeccable, and above all, fully aware of his efficiency. A warrior's joyfulness comes from having accepted his fate and from having truthfully assessed what lies ahead of him. I am going to disclose to you a warrior's secret. Perhaps you can call it a warrior's predilection. The life of a warrior cannot possibly be cold and lonely and without feelings, because it is based on his affection, his devotion, his dedication to his beloved. And who, you ask, is his beloved? I will show you now. His love is the world. He embraces this enormous earth. The earth knows that he loves it, and it bestows on him its care. That's why his life is filled to the brim, and his state, wherever he'll be, will be plentiful. He roams on the paths of his love, and wherever he is complete. This is the predilection of a warrior, this earth, the world. For a warrior, there can be no greater love. Only if one loves this earth with unbending passion can one release one's sadness. A warrior is always joyful because his love is unalterable, and his beloved, the earth, embraces him and bestows upon him inconceivable gifts. The sadness belongs only to those who hate the very thing that gives shelter to their being. This lovely being, which is alive to its last recesses and understands every feeling, soothed me. It cured me of my pains. And finally, when I had fully understood my love for it, it taught me freedom. Listen to that dog's barking. That is the way my beloved earth is helping me now to bring this last point to you. That barking is the saddest thing one can hear. That dog's barking is the nocturnal voice of a man. It comes from a house in that valley towards the south. A man is shouting through his dog, since they are companion slaves for life, his sadness, his boredom. He's begging his death to come and release him from the dull and dreary chains of his life. That barking and the loneliness it creates speak of the feelings of men. Men for whom an entire life was like one Sunday afternoon, an afternoon which was not altogether miserable, but rather hot and dull and uncomfortable. They sweated and fussed a great deal. They didn't know where to go or what to do. That afternoon left them only with the memory of petty annoyances and tedium. And then suddenly it was over. It was already night. The antidote that kills that poison is here, this earth. The sorcerer's explanation cannot at all liberate the spirit. Look at yourself. You have gotten to the sorcerer's explanation, but it doesn't make any difference that you know it. you are more alone than ever, because without an unwavering love for the being that gives you shelter, aloneness is loneliness. Only the love for this splendorous being can give freedom to a warrior's spirit, and freedom is joy, efficiency, and abandon in the face of any odds. We can become pure perception and move back and forth between the two inherent realms of all creation, the tonal and the nahual. Anything is possible if one wants it with unbending intent and you don't let your thoughts interfere. Power comes only after we accept our fate without recriminations. When one has nothing to lose, one becomes courageous. We are timid only when there is something we can still cling to. A warrior doesn't seek anything for his solace, nor can he possibly leave anything to chance. A warrior actually affects the outcome of events by the force of his awareness and his unbending intent.